Don't you think COVID-19 happened very conveniently? And what's your opinion on SARS-CoV-2 origin?
I'm increasingly convinced that the data are showing and the sequence data indicate that this was an engineered virus. Was it engineered through natural selection and passaging in animals and animal models that were engineered? Or was it engineered through molecular mechanisms like the CRISPR-Cas9 system, but it was engineered. And that's the appearance. I have some unique insight into this, I think, a little bit unique. I've shared it before.
Is it confidential?
No, it's not classified. I first shared it with the Reiter Fulmer group when they were asking me to testify in Germany. I was called by a CIA officer on January 4th, who was in Wuhan, telling me I needed to get my group spun up because this virus was a major threat. Okay? He was there under cover of his Harvard Medical School appointment. He was in Wuhan in the fourth quarter of 2019. His name is Michael Callahan. He is a CIA officer. He is one of our top experts in biowarfare. He has directed programs on gain-of-function research. Okay? He has held a senior position at DARPA. He was in Wuhan at the time, and he was very familiar with what was happening with this virus. Later, a month later, he told me, we have looked at this virus, and it has no genetic hallmarks of any kind of laboratory manipulation. Okay. Then about a month and a half ago, a very senior colleague of mine who's a GS-15, that's the civilian equivalent of a brigadier general, who works for DOD, called me, and I've known this guy since he was a postdoc. He called me and he said, Robert, I want you to start talking about Michael Callahan. He was not in China. He lied. We had no personnel there at that time. Okay. Now, for me, that's a red flag. That's basically saying this is a high-level government official in Defense Threat Reduction Agency that I've worked with for decades, telling me straight out to shut up, and what I know from my own ears and eyes isn't true. Now, the problem with that is that Michael went on the record with Science Magazine, and there's a whole article about famotidine in which Michael talks about having been in Wuhan at that time. I know Michael escaped Wuhan as the quarantine was dropping by boat because he wasn't authorized to be there by the Communist Party, okay? And what did they do with him after they picked him up off the boat? He then managed the Diamond Princess outbreak. And then he came back and worked for Bob Cadlick at ASPR in HHS, overseeing BARDA, okay? So, you know, were we involved in that? The documents are pretty clearly showing that that gain-of-function research in that Wuhan lab was funded by the NIH and was funded by DARPA. DITRA, Defense Threat Reduction Agency, the people that I work closely with, okay? And the thing about gain-of-function research is called dual-purpose research. Mm-hmm. Dual-purpose research is classified by its very nature, okay? Because it can be used, why is it called dual purpose research? It can be used for biodefense and protection and knowledge. It can also be used for biowarfare. There's another aspect to this that I mentioned to the Germans, and people haven't really recognized. There's a hole in the biowarfare treaty. Everybody needs to know this globally. The biowarfare treaty that was signed with the Soviet Union by the United States government, as a consequence of us developing highly lethal biowarfare agents that would stop tank commanders from the Soviet Union on a blitzkrieg before they got to the English Channel. That's why we developed it, okay? That treaty prohibits lethal agents. It does not prohibit incapacitating agents, okay? And incapacitating agents are not blocked. We are not, the people that I work with know that incapacitating agents represent a major threat, and The converse is also true.
Would you explain that? What are those agents and how do they work?
Classic examples are the equine encephalitis viruses. They are readily aerosolized. You can inhale them. We're developing vaccines and drugs against them, and they can be deployed into a local area. And if you inhale them and get infected, you get encephalitis. You get a brain infection. It typically doesn't kill you, but it makes you so sick that you're not going to fight. So the new warfare, the new world, is all about special ops. It's about small strike teams. We've seen that SEALs, and we hear these words. That's where modern warfare is. It's small strike teams backed by drones. This is the new warfare. It's not big tanks and armies and boom, boom. That's yesterday, okay? It's small, highly competent strike forces that are able to be inserted to take out a tactical target in a tactical region or do whatever the task is, and backed by drones of various types. There's a whole spectrum of drones. I mean, one of the big, I was with a security expert that does security for very, very wealthy people, you know, business leaders and stuff like that. The thing he's most worried about is consumer drones as assassination tools. Okay. That's the new world we're in. And these kinds of incapacitating agents can be deployed by drone strategically to knock out threats within a region. And then one can insert your strike forces to go do whatever it is they want to do. The other threat our government is very aware of is that by understanding the genetics of different populations, ergo races, it's possible theoretically to engineer pathogens that will selectively target different ethnic groups. That's the new horizon. That's the new reality. And we kind of got to all get attuned to that's what we're dealing with, is a totally different world in which biologic agents, drones, and other things, and media manipulation, propaganda, control, censorship, is all integrated to enable global power. I mean, if you look at the Pfizer contracts that are leaked, okay, and I've had lawyer friends that looked at those that went, good heavens, I can't imagine that I would ever get terms like that. You know, I'm a slacker. Look at what Pfizer's done. This is amazing. They're leveraging governments, okay? What if you step back from that and look at, you know, from above, what's going on? It's a new OPEC. Access to these technologies of rapid response vaccine development is being leveraged for geopolitical benefit. Okay? It is a new vehicle for exerting global economic and political power. And the developing countries and the Middle East know it. Okay? They know they're being had by the Western nations. China knows it. China is busy trying to do a deal with Pfizer right now, by the way. Okay? The thing about the RNA tech is not these vaccines. These vaccines are just the entry point. Mm-hmm. The RNA tech makes it possible to make customized vaccines fast, okay, based on genetic information. And the whole manufacturing process is standardized. Whereas with regular vaccines and regular biologics, it takes a long, long time to develop a manufacturing process and release and testing and blah, blah, blah for a new product. With the RNA tech, basically you just change the sequence inside the RNA and the whole rest of the formulation, chemically, it stays the same. And that makes it possible to make these things really fast and at small scale. That is transformational. It's transformational for personalized medicine, cancer, but it also makes it possible to make customized vaccines on short notice. That can be deployed into, you know, small populations. If you think that the bad guys, metaphorically speaking, have come up with some new pathogen and they're working on it in this geographic area, okay? It means that you, once you get a sample of that pathogen, you can sequence it, you can generate a vaccine for it, you can vaccinate your special forces, they can go in and deploy and take out whatever that group is that's building this new thing. That's one version of that story. Okay. Another version of that story is if you want to come up with a new weaponized incapacitating agent, then it's really easy to make a new vaccine to protect the people that are going to deploy that strategically into fill in the blank area. Now, would our government ever do that? Oh, I can't imagine. Has the CIA ever assassinated duly elected leaders in other countries? I don't think I have enough fingers to count, right? So this is the reality that's behind all this. And we need to wake up. That was a riff.
Yes. Wow, this is actually even scary to think about. And yet this reality, and like you said, this, it's unfolding before our eyes. But like you said, there are strategies that people can use to try to resist. I know that the enemy is powerful and well organized and well funded, but there is a chance, like you said, organizing and informing people of the threat that they may be not even aware of. This is very important. And I believe that our conversation today was a step in that direction.
I hope so.
Yes, I really do so. Thank you very much, sir, for hosting us here this beautiful day in your beautiful farm, and for your candid and very, very strong arguments. We do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you,
Dr. Malone. I think knowledge and information is the one thing I can help with. And I'm not going to go lead. I'm not a leader of major protests and social movements. But I appreciate your willingness to provide an opportunity to share what I know. And your interest in the topic and your leadership in as somebody in alternative media that is willing and able to provide information to people and let them make their own decisions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Malone, for this amazing conversation. This is Veronica Kirilenko for The New American.